So the next probably a long time we're going to be kind of studying these 59 slogans. Now, I am horrific with names, especially names like from different traditions. So there was a text that was written by a master, Atisha, and it was later kind of retranslated by Chikawa, maybe Chekawa, again. And it's called The Root Text of the 7 Points of Training the Mind. And the short word for it is the Lojong teaching. So you may have heard of these teaching. It just means mind training. So you don't have to be freaked out by words in other languages. We're not, breaking any laws here. Hola means hello, right? That's not scary. So Lojong just means mind training, right? And the guy who wrote it the second time broke it down into 59 slogans. And there's this really cool kit by an author named Pema Chodron, who I mention all the time. And it comes with the cards, each with the slogans on it, with a little explanation on the back, a little pamphlet on like how to use them and how to, practice with them, and then a miniature version of her book, Start Where You Are. That kind of goes into all of these. So I'm kind of pulling from her text, and she's more of the traditional way. And then there's another book called Training in Compassion by an author, Norman Fisher, and he has a different perspective. He was more of like a Zen student, and they're very different. They're the same, but they're different, and they have different different aspects. So I'm kind of pulling from those two books. So if you want to follow along, if you're interested, you can order those two books. You don't have to get the whole kit. There is the book Start Where You Are, and there are other books too if you want to explore this. So I figured we'd do, depending on the slogan, we could do one a time, one a session, or some of them are very similar, so maybe we'll do three or four in a day. But this way, because I see you guys consistently and it's basically the same faces all the time, that we can have something that we can practice together and then check in after 2 weeks, and then and we just keep growing. So basically these teachings, kind of like the way that I present meditation, these teachings are a way to incorporate this into our daily life, right? That's what this is all about. It's not just let's de-stress for 20 minutes and go back to our crazy life and be lost and miserable. It's how do we, how does our meditation practice translate into our daily life? What's our practice when I'm at work? What's my practice when I'm cooking, when I'm in an argument, when I'm, grieving, when I'm depressed or anxious? So these are just little fun ways that you can remind yourself about the practice and ways to do it. And some of the things I wrote down from the two books were that the teachings help us use our difficulties, right? So normally, as I've explained before, we think of our difficulties as like obstacles that we need to conquer or get rid of or push away. Whereas this kind of training says these are the very things that you want to, gain some insight and, gain some wisdom and a way to cultivate compassion and just understanding our human condition and going deep into it. And it's kind of it is a big attitude shift. And an attitude change in how you see things. Sometimes just changing, your relationship to things makes a huge difference. And I remember Pema Chodron in one of her books, she was explaining how she had this, she was on a really long retreat, and she had this awful feeling that she, didn't like, and she would talk about it. And basically the teacher said, oh, that's like he called it Dakini bliss, but I won't go into it. But basically, that's like, some good stuff. That's bliss. Like that's it. And he told her that's what she was looking for, and then she wanted it, and then it didn't show up anymore, right? But it's just that change in attitude, and then it's like, oh well, let me look for that. Let me welcome it next time then. So just having that. Just that little bit of knowledge, like, hey, your difficulties, like, that's your spiritual practice. that's not in the way of your spiritual practice. That's it. Those are the very things. It's the wisdom in disguise. And it's our teacher. And, you know, most of us want a different teacher. It's like, oh, I don't want my anger. I don't want that teacher. I want this teacher. I don't want, you know, this addiction. I want that, some other teacher, or this annoying person at work, or, you know. But we have the teachers we have, and that's, you know, who we're going to learn from, you know, our daily life. Another point is accepting where we are and who we are in this moment. And like in her book, Start Where You Are. It's not, you know, and as Westerners, we're so like, we're always like 8 steps ahead. It's like, yeah, this is where I want to be. This is where I want to be. And we always miss where we are. And sometimes where we want to be, we have this fantasy about it because we don't like where we are or what's here. And that's a big part of our suffering. We're so quick to run away from what's here without ever having really done any exploration and deep looking. So to kind of accept where we are, to learn how to relate directly and openly to our suffering, right? Most of us, you know, are in that push-pull. Like, if it feels good, I'm going to try to do everything I can so that I can maintain it and hold it forever. And then the other end is, you know, I don't want this. Let me try to avoid it at all costs. Let me do everything I can to not feel this or not be around this, or right. And how does that go? Right? The things you try to hold end up leaving. The things you try to get rid of end up coming. So maybe there's a different way to relate. Learning how to stay, right? That's a big part of meditation. How do we stay? And learning how to stay, or rather not running away from our pain. Right? Again, that's how we've been trained. That's how our minds were created or have evolved, whatever. And trying to escape pain so quickly, trying to escape discomfort. Even in meditation, you'll see it. You'll be sitting there, and as soon as your leg starts to hurt or your back starts to hurt, you just move, right? And think of all the things that happened in that split second, right? First, there was the arising of unpleasant, right? A sensation that was unpleasant. There was a feeling tone associated with it, like, you know, not good. Right? Then there was the thought, this is my back, this is my body, this is my pain. There was an identity with it. Then there was an aversion to it. It shouldn't be this way. I shouldn't feel this. I'm trying to meditate. No, I don't want this. Then there was the desire. I should move to make it better. Right? And then there's the attachment to that desire, and then there's the action. Right? But that happens, pain, move. We don't even see that process. So all this stuff happens so quickly. So we learn to stay. And I'm not saying we need to torture ourselves. This isn't about sitting on nails, right? Or, you know, there's enough pain in life as it is. There's enough difficulty and unpleasant thing. You don't have to go looking for it, I promise. But how can we learn to stay, right? Because it's in the running away where we create all kinds of our unskillful and unwholesome reactions, right? The reactivity to the discomfort. It's where, you know, extreme cases like addiction or something like that, that comes from wanting to escape, right? Not willing to stay with the pain that's present. So those are just some points that I found interesting that I wanted to write down. And so basically there's these seven, the 59 slogans are broken down into seven parts. And the first one is, what is the first one? The preliminaries. And there's only one slogan for this. But I think this can take up our whole class today. So I'm probably just going to stick with that. So the slogan is train in the preliminaries. So that's the one that we're going to work. And the two teachers have two very different, they kind of meet at the end, but they have two very different beginning points. So obviously, the first preliminary is meditation, right? And, you know, they spell it a lot of different ways, but I just heard someone say it this way, so I'm going to use this, guys. It's samatha, right? Sometimes it has H's and they don't say the H. I don't understand Sanskrit and Pali. And all, I don't even know if that's Sanskrit or Pali. So, again, I'm not a language major. I'm not a scholar, so I'm not going to pretend. But basically, it's single-pointed awareness. Right, we need some level of concentration. Why? because if we cannot concentrate on doing what we're doing, then we're just going to be swept away by every mood, every thought, every feeling, every sensation, every sound, right? We just get swept away. So we have to, one, learn to stay, teach our mind to stay, but two, and I think this is more important, learn to see when our mind is running away and gently bring it back. So, you know, usually with this single-pointed awareness practice, it's the breath. It's focusing on the breath, whether that's counting the breath or repeating a mantra or just observing the breath. That's the main practice, right? Is we start practicing with the breath. And we'll do it today, so this way you can continue it for the next 2 weeks and you know, hopefully practice. And, you know, this basic meditation, like I said, it's the foundation. And if you don't have a strong foundation on a house, the rest is going to collapse. So if you don't have some level of concentration, then a lot of these other things are going to be hard. If you can't concentrate on what are you doing and realize when your mind's wandering, how are you going to do that in daily life? It's a lot easier to realize when you're sitting and not distracted. Well, not maybe not, I don't want to say easy, but you have a better chance of catching it while you're sitting here, not on your phone, not watching TV, not talking, than you do engaging with people and situations in a fast pace in daily life. So we need that foundation. So, and you could spend a year or more doing just concentration practice just to get a really strong foundation. And now the other teacher, he kind of says, yes, of course, meditation is our preliminary, but he takes it a step further, and this is a very Zen thing, but it's owning your life in this moment, everything that's happened, all the difficulties you've been through, the things you're experiencing now, to own it, right? And he says to stop moaning and groaning about it and just say, okay, like I say, this is it. Right? These are the ingredients of your life. They may not be the ingredients you wanted, but we got to throw that nonsense out because it's what you got. You got what you got, you know, and that's not a dismissal of your pain or of the difficulties that you may have endured. I can't possibly know what each of you have been through and the sorrows and pains you hold, but this is your life and this is what you have, right? So part of it is the preliminary of just saying, okay, this is my life. And making that like firm commitment to relate differently. Right? And that's part of the preliminary too, is just saying, all right, like this is my life and I want to relate differently to it. I want to do something with it. One teacher said our life is like a blip. Right? Think about it. It's in the grand scheme of things, it's just, you know, the light's on for a while, then there's no more light. Then we're here and then we're gone. Really. So what are we going to do? How do we want to relate to this life? And what can we learn about being alive and the nature of things, the nature of our suffering, and helping others? I mean, that this whole training is not so that I can be at ease. It's to be more helpful in the world, right? This comes from a tradition of, you know, where the point of the practice is to become what's called a bodhisattva, which is, think of like Mother Teresa. She's a bodhisattva. You know, you dedicate your life to easing suffering in the world. That, you know, you're going to keep going on until everybody is free from suffering. Which, of course, an impossible task. But, you know, think about what you can accomplish with that as your end goal. You're not going to free everybody, but think of what you can do, right? And Jane had told me about that starfish story, right? Was it jellyfish or starfish? Starfish. Right. So there's a boy who, you know, all these starfish washed up on the beach, and a boy's, you know, taking them and throwing them back. And I mean, I'm talking thousands, you know, of these things. And a man comes along and kind of like laughs at him and said, what are you doing? You can't help all these starfish. Like, what, you know, what's the point of what you're doing? And he's like, you know what? These ones will appreciate what I'm doing, you know? And that's kind of the same mindset. Look, I can't get to all of them, but the ones I can get to, I can help tremendously. And I just totally butchered that story. It's a lot better. if you Google this the starfish story, better. And that last point is kind of what I was just saying, is develop the courage to begin a new way of living. Right? So that's our preliminaries as far as the first part. Then there's the traditional part. And that is contemplating these four reminders. And this is where the cards are helpful that she has. It even comes with like a little thing that you can put the card on so it stays upright. But I would just say bring it with you. But it says, it gives you the four reminders on the back. So the first reminder is the reminder of our precious human life. That this is a rare opportunity. Right, to just be alive. And I know most of us work so caught in our day-to-day nonsense that we think, yeah, right, we're very rare and right, that we don't realize how much of an opportunity we have being alive, right? We could have been an ant or a rock or nothing, right? But here we are. And if you look at, like, I love watching all the space shows and everything, but, like, infinite empty space and all these explosions and gas and fire and, you know, big fiery suns and here we are somehow at the Waldwick Library. Right? If that, like, it's bizarre. Right? And there's a great analogy that I love to tell of the chances of being born a human being. And this is, again, a traditional kind of analogy. So I want you to imagine the earth covered in ocean. Right? So if it's all ocean. Big earth covered in the ocean. And in that ocean is one sea turtle. And every 100 years, it comes up to take a breath. Also in the ocean is one small little tube floating around. Yeah, you know, just going along. The chances of being born is like the chances of that turtle coming up with his head right in the middle of the tube. Pretty slim, right? You think of the size of the turtle, size of the ocean of the earth, as it is now. Just imagine the whole earth and the size of a wee little tube. Right? It's very rare. What are the chances of all this happening? And, you know, if the earth was just a little further away, too cold. If it was a little closer, too hot. Who knows where the water came from? I know they have the theories with the, you know, melting ice and asteroids or whatever. Again, not my thing, so could be making up nonsense, but it's what I remember from the shows. But here we are, we're breathing. We have this moment. So what are we going to do with it? And, you know, to learn deeply about life and the mystery of life, you don't have to go further than yourself. Because we're it, right? Right now, your heart's beating. How is that happening? Does anyone know? It's just like kind of, you know, beating. Whenever I feel my heartbeat, I'm reminded of how little control I have over things. That I'm not in control of my life, to an extent. I didn't ask to be born. It's just, there I was. Here I am. Right? Your skin cells are constantly regenerating. How does that happen? Why don't we change into something else? Some other figure, you know? Like, we have the same face, the same, you know, fingerprints. Like, there's, like, some deep wisdom here. You get a cut. Platelets fill up the cut so you don't bleed out. You know, you shove dead plants and animals into tubes in your body, and then that somehow becomes you or whatever. Yes, it's strange, but it's also very precious. We have this opportunity to go deep into this human form and learn about the nature of things, the nature of us, the nature of the universe, right? If we understand ourselves deeply, we understand everything deeply, in a sense. You know, so not to waste it. And again, we also have this opportunity to help other people and to you know, really make an impact. So that's the first thing, that we have to remind ourselves that this isn't just some nonsense life, like that this is special. And we are part of something special, right? It might be painful and difficult, and mundane sometimes, right, going to work, but it's a precious opportunity to practice, right, these teachings. So number two, if that wasn't deep enough, sorry, I have to check my phone because there's no clock in here. And I talk too much, so. The second reminder is the certainty of death, right? So yes, we do have this precious opportunity, but at any time it can just be taken away, right? It can be just snatched, right? So there, Pema Chodron always talks about the time of death, or death is certain, the time of death is uncertain. What's the most important thing, right? So if we think we have time, it's like, yeah, I'll meditate next week, or I'll meditate once things calm down in my life, or, you know, and then before you know it, something happens and you didn't do any mind training. You have no tools to face difficulties, and then something happens. You're just going to be, a slave to conditions. I'm not saying we're training our minds for death, but in one sense, we're training our minds to learn to be open to and embrace the reality of life. And it's not always pleasant. I'm not saying it's all bad. I have kids. They're very fun to hang out with most of the time, right? I have people that I enjoy seeing. I have food I like to eat. So I'm not saying it's all bad, but it all ends. It all comes to an end, right? That yummy piece of ice cream, cake, or whatever, you finish it, right? Then, or the cake's gone. Maybe you finish one slice, you go to the next, but eventually the cake's gone, or you feel sick. So, you know, but it's again, another reminder. So we're reminded that it's precious, but we're also reminded that it ends, and that it, that's natural, right? It's not like, how dare life, you know, how dare you do that to me? It's just, no, this is what every human being, every being, not even just human beings, have to deal with. We just know that it's going to happen. That's what makes us different. Can drive us a little crazy. But we don't waste time. And we learn to live fully. We learn to, you know, really embrace every moment, every emotion, every thought, every joy, every difficulty. And again, this whole point of this is learn how to use what happens in life, whether joyful or painful, as a way to grow our practice. Right, as a way to gain insight, to gain wisdom, to cultivate compassion for the condition that we're all in, right? And that, this is, and these two things kind of make us the same, right? Because we get caught in the differences. This person's Catholic, and this person's Muslim, and this person's white, and this person's black, and we're all gonna die. That makes us the same. We all have a human body that's subject to aging, illness, and death. We all suffer the same types of suffering to different degrees. We all have to deal with the same thing that we were all thrown into. We were all thrown in this together. So, you know, how can we learn to be a little more kind and compassionate and wise, right? So again, death, when you really contemplate your death, and not just like think about it, but really like try to feel that reality, it can be very powerful in shifting what's important for you. And if you don't think about it, then one day it just arrives and you're like, oh crap. You know, now my life's over. I have all these regrets. I didn't live fully. I didn't love deeply. I didn't, you know, help anybody. It's just like I was just so caught up in me and my stuff. And then it's over, right? So it's very, we don't want to think about it, but it's very helpful on this path of waking up, right? To just be reminded. The next one, I guess you could call it karma. I don't like to use that word because there's a lot of ideas. You know, it's not like if I kick a puppy, a big puppy's going to come along and kick me one day. You know, that's the kind of thing we have in our mind. Like it's this like punishment and reward. But that's not really it. It's just saying that, you know, our actions and words have consequences. So everything that we do on a day-to-day basis is planting seeds for our future. What you choose to indulge in your mind, the words that you choose to let leave your mouth, and the actions that you decide to take in life, they're all planting seeds for you. They all will bear consequences. We don't think that they all will, but they will. You know, and you don't need to believe in past lives, and you can, rebirth, whatever. But there's enough proof of that in this life, right? There's instant karma, right? You punch a wall, it hurts. Then you got to pay for the wall. But then there's other karma of like, if you keep indulging in anger, you know, every day, then, you know, what are you planting? Well, you're planting the seeds for a lot more anger, for it to be that much easier to be angry, you know, and your world just going to keep shrinking and shrinking. Whereas if you practice pausing throughout the day, if you practice meditation and you bring some mindfulness to the situation, you're planting seeds of awakening, you're planting seeds of wisdom, of clear seeing, of relaxation, right? And really all our suffering, and it's in our mind, right? Our suffering comes, I'm not saying that our pain is our fault, right? Like we said, that life is this way. There's difficulty, there's pain, there's grief, there's sorrows and illness. But there's also the reactivity that makes it a whole hell of a lot worse. And that's what we have some control over, is what kind of mind receives this difficult life. And that's what we're training. We're training to embrace things as they are, be open, rather than the normal push and pull. Like, I don't like this, or I want more of this, or I want less of this. No, no. You know, and the shoulds and the shouldn'ts and the expectations and all this stuff. So does that make sense for karma, that there are consequences to how we live? You know, and if you believe in that, the butterfly effect, right? Even this a little, you know, butterfly on the other side of the world can affect the way, you know, everything kind of is. Then every thought you indulge in, everything that you put out there with your words or every action you take, is it has a ripple effect. It's not just you. It doesn't just affect you. Everything, even if it's something you do in private, right? If you sit around and you're just thinking angry thoughts in private, it's still going to have an effect, right? Because eventually those angry thoughts will become angry words and angry actions. And that's going to have a whole effect on people. You ever have an angry person walk into the room, even if they're not angry at you, they're just really pissed off. And they walk in, you're like, oh my God. You sense it. It's uncomfortable, right? So you have a profound effect. And you might not think, oh, well, I'm thinking these things, nobody can tell. We can tell, right? If you pay attention, you can tell what people are feeling and not necessarily thinking, but you can see. And for me, I look at people's eyes. And everyone's going to look away for a second. But I can see in people's eyes what they're going through. And even if they have a big smile on their face, I can tell their eyes are sad and wounded. Or, you know, it's just, you can't hide from things. You think you can, but you can't. And the last one is suffering, right? And I guess this gets to that, what I just said, that there is pain in life. And it's not that you're doing it wrong or that you're being punished or something's wrong with you if you're struggling or having difficulty. It's just, this is how it is. Of course it's hard. Everything ends. That's hard. Getting thrown into a body that doesn't cooperate, right? Mm-hmm. That gets older, that gets sick, you know? And you lose people you love. You get into contact with people that you don't like. There's all kinds of things that make this hard. Just the uncertainty factor, right? Every moment's uncertain. See? Somebody just fell over. I don't know. Maybe it was a door. I don't know.
Poor person. That was loud.
So, things are just that alone, that the uncertainty factor makes it uneasy. What's going to happen next? Who knows? Who knows? You know, and so you might go into your mundane day-to-day work, but every day is completely new. It's not the same. You're not the same. Your mind's not the same. The feelings that are present are not the same. The body surely isn't the same. The people you meet are all different. It's like one flowing river. It's not, nothing is ever the same. And nothing is certain. Which just brings a general sense of unease. So even if you have everything going for you, somewhere deep down inside knows that that's going to change. So there's always this sense of, like this little quiver of being. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. We can make friends with that, right? We can learn to stay and learn to not limit ourselves to that. Because, again, a lot of our behaviors that are not skillful or wholesome come from wanting to escape that vulnerability, escape that quiver, and just grasping for some certainty. It's like that analogy that I think I said one time. You're falling, you know, in a bottomless pit, but you're grasping onto the rocks, you know, but you're never going to hit the ground. So there's no, you know, you're just making it worse. You're just getting, you know, sharp, jagged rocks scratching you and digging into your skin, and you're grasping on, but you can just let that rock go and just go for that free fall, you know, to nowhere. So, yeah, so preciousness of human life, the certainty of death, the, you know, the, that our actions do in fact have consequences, and that, you know, that suffering does exist, or pain does exist, and suffering exists when we're caught in me world, right? When we're caught in, how does this relate to me? The filter of my desires and my fears and my hopes, and that's how we normally receive life. We want it to be like, we want it to be like this. There it is again. We want life to fit in this little bubble that we made, and then it just, life keeps popping it and not fitting in it. And we keep trying to recreate the small bubble instead of just saying, screw the bubble. Let's just deal with what happens next. You know, what's next? Okay, this. Now this, right? And we can live very simply like that. Doesn't mean we still can't plan things or live our lives like we are, but we just deal with one thing at a time. And you can see why the preliminary of single-pointed concentration is important. Because if you cannot keep your attention with what you're doing, how are you going to meet life that way? How are you going to be okay now this moment? Oh, here's this reaction. You know, that's not helpful, so I'm going to let that go. Right? And just to continue to act freely from our reactivity. Right? And act in line with what's appropriate for that moment. So, all right, maybe I could take one question and then we got to meditate. So, is there any questions on all that? It's a lot. A lot of heavy stuff, too. So, all right, so if there's no questions, then we'll do our meditation on the breath. So, get comfortable as you can. Let me get my timer here. And I would recommend, you know, this is the meditation that you try for a while. You know, just coming back to the breath. We'll do the counting. So this will be something that you can try. So we'll start, as always, with the sound of the three bells. And then I'll guide you through the rest. So you can close the eyes. Sit up tall. Hands, you know, wherever comfortable. So let's start by listening to the bell. So the first preliminary, I guess you could say, is arriving. We have to show up fully to our life, to engage with it, to learn from it. So show up with attention to this moment, to you sitting in this room, breathing, hearing sounds, having thoughts, feeling sensations. and just being clear as to what's happening. And this isn't, you know, with any sort of biases, right? It's an unbiased witnessing of the unfolding of this moment-to-moment experience of body and mind. And because our eyes are closed and we're not eating anything or doing anything other than sitting here, our life comes down to just a few things. So, body sensations, which includes our feelings, sounds, and thoughts, reactions. So let's just look at those before we get started. So let's start with the body. What does it feel like to have a body that's sitting, that's breathing? You can feel all these sensations, especially at the places of contact. So, you know, your feet touching the floor, see what that's like. Your bottom on the chair, feel the pressure. Noticing the hands resting on the knees or in the lap, what that feels like. Notice the movement of the torso with each breath, the belly, the ribs, the chest. You can notice the warmth of the room. Maybe there's some aches or pains or places of stiffness in the body. You can notice that too. Again, we're not doing the push and pull. We're just receiving everything as it is with equanimity. If it's unpleasant, it's just unpleasant. Nothing more, nothing less. If it's pleasurable, if you feel good right now, then okay. That changes too. So just take everything in, like almost like everything has one flavor to it. And it does, the flavor of change. So just bearing witness to all these sensations coming and going. And that includes our feelings too, right? Because they're felt in the body as sensations. So if you have any sensations or feelings, rather, well, just feel them, just like you're feeling all the other ones. You know, you don't need a story about it. You don't need to make an identity out of it. Just a passing sensation in the body. Feel it. Then we shift to the sounds. Sounds aren't a problem. It's that our mind goes out and chases after the sound and labels it good, bad, relaxing, annoying. Sounds don't make suffering, we do. So just try to hear without adding anything. what's it like to just hear without analyzing or judging or labeling. And then in the same way that you're listening to the sounds, just shift inwards and listen to your thoughts. Listen to the commentator, the narrator, the worries, the planning, the memories. You don't need to shut your mind off when you meditate. It's fine. But you don't need to grab hold of your thoughts either and let them take you away. So just watch, as if you were watching a movie or, you know, a play. And just watch the arising of all these different mental formations. Right? These dramas arise and these storylines and ideas. But then they also just fall away because we don't give them anywhere to land when we're meditating. There's no soil for them to grow. So we come back now to the body. We allow the body to soften. And our focus today is going to be that single-pointed concentration. So we're going to try to gently hold our attention with the felt sensation of breathing. So right at the tips of the nostril, as you breathe in, you can actually feel the cool sensations of the breath. And as you breathe out, very subtle but slightly warmer sensations as you let go on the exhale. Before we start counting, just try for a minute to stay with the sensations. So that's maybe like 8 or 9 breaths. Try not to miss one. Just see if you can fully experience it without getting distracted. And then from here, we'll start to add the counting. So we basically count from 1 to 10, and we only count the exhales. So as you're breathing in, you'll just be aware. You'll know you're breathing in. You'll feel it. You're aware of the moment. Then as you exhale, you'll silently say in your mind, 1. Right? And then we breathe in again. And then the next exhale, 2. And you continue in this way until you get to 10, or until you have a thought that pulls you away, which is more likely to happen. So when you have a thought that arises, you just label it. Ah, thinking. And then start back at one. You might not get past two. Right? And that's fine. What's important is that you're labeling the thought as thinking. And you're starting again. And you're bringing it back to the task at hand, which for us is counting. So starting with the next breath, the next exhale, begin counting 1 through 10 while also labeling thoughts as thinking. Your attention. Bring it back to the breath. Start back at one. after your next breath, you can just let go of the counting. You can even let go of the single-pointed kind of attention, or the attempt at single-pointed attention on the breath. And just imagine like you just fell into space and merged with it. So just really getting expansive, spacious, and vast. And you're just the space that's holding this moment exactly as it is, holding yourself, your body, your mind, and everything else in this moment, holding each other just as we all are. Not resisting, not fighting, not adding any extra unnecessary suffering or difficulty to the moment, but just allowing it to be what it is. And in just a moment, I'll hit the bell again. And just let the sound pass through. Right? There's nothing you have to do. You don't even have to try to listen, because your ears will just pick it up all by themselves. And your mind will translate it into a sound that you hear, and then it'll go away. So completely effortless. Just let the sound pass through. So all together we can take a nice deep breath in the nose, out the mouth, and slowly just begin to maybe wiggle the fingers and toes, move around a little bit. And when you feel ready, slowly open the eyes. How we doing? There's a deep joy and bliss that comes from concentration. Don't get stuck on it, because it goes away when you're done concentrating. But it is a nice side effect, right? So the more concentrated you can get your mind, the more levels of bliss you can experience. You can also go into deep samadhi and not realize you're sitting there for a few hours. People might think you're dead, but you're not. But don't worry, that's really, really, really advanced. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But that's, you know, the practice. And I would try this practice indefinitely for now, until we introduce another one, and maybe I'll guide us through it each time. But, you know, it's important to really practice. The mind is not easily trained. Mm. Think about how hard it is to learn an instrument or a new task or a new job. This is a lot harder. It's simple, right? Just one, two, count. Do what you're doing, be where you are. But the mind is has its own way sometimes. So daily meditation is really important, because habits of mind run deep. And it's very easy to just go back into forgetting about all this stuff and just being lost in our reactivity. So if you at least do meditation, you have a reminder that this is what I'm trying to do. And really, it's what we're trying to do all day, right? To realize when we're lost in a thought or thinking, and to come back to what the task at hand, to what we're doing. So practice this counting method, even if it's 3 minutes. You know, you get the timer, you hear the bell, you take some deep breaths, you relax your body, you get right into counting until the bell goes again. And that's all you have to do. You just have to be willing to sit there and try it over and over again. And it takes a long time to really be able to settle in. And I'm not talking about like 20, 30, 40, 50. It takes like months and maybe I would even say years to be able to just really settle in. And don't let that be discouraging, because you have to be where you are, right? Start where you are. That's all I got for you guys. If you have any questions before I go.
How do you concentrate and not fall asleep?
Well, that's why sitting up helps. There was monks that used to sit on the edge of like a mountain or of a well, so if they fell asleep, they'd fall in and die. That'll keep you awake. Walking meditation is helpful for that, so you can count each step. Remember how, I don't know if you were ever at the class where you did the slow walking meditation, so that's a nice way. But not getting too comfortable. So like maybe sitting at the front edge of the chair and also getting enough sleep, you know, at night, and, you know, or maybe doing, you know, some deep relaxation first on your back where you might fall asleep for a little and get really restored. And then once you come out of that and you're awake, to try sitting. And time of day is important. You know, maybe right when you wake up will be better. Maybe middle of the day. So it's just kind of experiment and figure that out. Yeah.
You were saying use a bell. How would you?
So there's a, well, there's an app for that. If you have like a phone, it's called Insight Timer.
Okay.
And you just set the time that you want, the bell sound you want, and then that's what I use, but I turn the bell to use the real bell. But if you don't have that, just setting a, even just like a kitchen timer, or you set your oven timer, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just as long as something, so you don't sit there.
You mentioned something in the beginning of the class that I'm sorry I was late.
That's okay.
Like something to look up or something.
Well, we're basically doing these 59 slogans that come from a text, and there's two books that you can follow along with. One's called Start Where You Are by Pema Chodron, and the other one is Training in Compassion with Norman Fisher.
Okay.
I like his. I love Pema Chodron, but hers is a little more traditional. He's a little more like secular. In a sense, so you might resonate more with that. You might resonate with the other. I mean, but for me personally, Norman Fisher, for this specific type of text, is what I like. But I like, there's plenty of other people that do translations of this text and teachings on it, but those are the two I have and that I've been reading. So, all right?
Okay. Thank you.